This is the Cannon Crested Arsenal podcast.
Here's Ozil. Lacazette. Ozil! Arsenal are walking in a winter wonderland. What a turnaround! He's come up with it. The scorpion touch. Olivier Giroud.
Hi everyone, and welcome to the Cannon Crested Arsenal podcast. I hope you're having a great day wherever you are. If you're driving, you're jogging, you're taking a walk, whatever you're doing while you listen to this, I hope you are having fun. It's the fourth edition of our monthly podcast, and we want to say thank you to everybody who has taken time to listen. If you've listened to all three before this, I can't thank you enough for your support. Again, I want to say thank you to everybody who sends us feedback on Twitter, especially with respect to the pod. I can't say thank you enough because it helps us to improve, especially considering the technical issues that we're having with developing the content. But you all stay strong, and we really appreciate all the feedback that you give us. So thank you very much. My name is Simon, and I'm recording this podcast with a few of my friends and Arsenal fans in Lagos, Nigeria. I have with me on the pod, as always, Unai Emery. Welcome to the pod, boss. Whoever is Unai Emery can just say hi back. I'm sure everybody
Hello.
Knows who you are.
So that's
explain yourself.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening. So Unai Emery is Mohamed Amali. He goes by the Twitter handle. No. This is Unai Emery in Abuja, Nigeria. It's at Mo Amali. At Mo Amali. Welcome to the pod, Mo. You missed the last one. Yeah, it's okay.
I did
a good job trying to defend Unai Emery as much as I could.
Oh, I will say thank you to that.
You're all guns blazing. It's okay. No love here, actually. Okay, so we also have on the pod Emmanuel Wachuku at Ima_daily. Hi, Ima.
Hi.
Okay. That was a very boring hi. Is there a problem?
I'm trying to be professional.
It's not working,
Ima, please.
It's great to be here. It's great to see everybody laughing. It's been a good month.
Yeah, it's been a good month, actually, as well. I also have here Mastermind. Mastermind, how are you? You dropped off the last time on the pod due to network issues, and you cost us a sponsor as well, so you have to... You have to make it work now. How are you?
Hi, sir. I'm very well, thank you. Good to be back.
You're going to have to be better with your audio, though. I can hardly hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, much better.
Okay, yes. I said good to be here. Hopefully, no network issues this time around.
Yeah, perfect stuff. Hi, Toby. Toby, hi. How are you?
I'm fine. Hi, everyone.
Good. Hi, Toby. You have to be louder as well. I have a question to ask you.
Okay. Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, I can. I have a question to ask you.
Okay, go ahead.
Good. What's your love language?
Simon, is there something you need to tell me that I don't know about? That we've been friends for almost a decade. What haven't you told me?
Shut up and answer the question.
What's your love language, Toby?
There is no such thing as a love language.
Okay, that's the point I wanted you to say as well. So, me and Toby are having this ongoing conversation around love languages. I think they are love languages. I completely believe in them. Toby doesn't. And he thinks his opinion is superior. Anyways, at some point during the podcast, we will address that issue. But hi, Toby. Welcome to the pod.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me.
Great. Okay, one thing we can all agree is that we are all loving Unai Emery, right? That's a given. We're loving him now. He's the best thing since sliced bread and coke right now.
Who eats sliced bread and coke? Simon.
Yeah. What? What did you say?
Who eats sliced bread?
No, not like you eat sliced bread and coke together. But I know some people do. But
I do.
If you have sliced...
Are you a bricklayer? Move on. Don't mind.
Okay, shut up. Let's go on. So just to give like a roundup of everything that's happened to on our Arsenal related in the month, because it's a monthly podcast, obviously. We played Spurs and we drew with them 1-1, sadly. However, we covered the Spurs game during the last podcast because we recorded after it, so we wouldn't be talking about that game during this podcast. We then went away to Europa and then we lost 3-1 at Rennes. And then we came back home and played United and we beat them 2-0 at the Emirates. And we had to qualify for the Europa League by beating Rennes again 3-0 at the Emirates. So with respect to our objectives for the season, which I believe is primarily to qualify for the Champions League, I think March was a great month and we are on track to, if everything remains the way they are, to be in the Champions League. We're currently fourth on the log, 1 point behind Spurs. Hopefully we get to celebrate St. Tottenham's Day this season.
Yes.
And we are still in the Europa League and we are scheduled to play Napoli in a few weeks. On the subject of playing Napoli, I was able to get a Napoli fan to come and speak to us. He will give us the perspective of the Arsenal Napoli game from their own perspective. So that's an interesting conversation I think we're going to have. Primarily also because there's not much games this month. I'm not sure, has there been any months where I can't remember a month where we've been so quiet with the number of games we've played? Well, does anybody have?
I don't think so. I don't, because we're out of the FA Cup so early, usually we play the FA Cup. And then, so we're having like 2 weeks where we're not even playing at all.
Yeah.
So I don't think we've had this kind of like short period. And also, that's why the team is in Dubai currently for warm weather, which we've never done. I'm sure if Arsene Wenger was still coach, we would have never gone. I am pretty sure. When I heard the news, I was like, wow, this has never happened. I know other clubs do it. Man United went a couple of weeks ago. I like to go to like warm weather places for training, but the new man in charge. So
somebody should explain. Yeah,
we also went for a shooting thing at some point.
Yes, paintball thing, like a team building exercise.
What is the point of warm weather training? What does it do?
Okay, it's for because of the weather in the UK, it's really difficult for them to train for long periods outdoor. In Arsenal's case, they usually use they have an indoor facility at Conley, but because it's indoor, it's not as big, it's not as expansive, so it's really better for them to go, you know, to somewhere warm where they can train outdoors. Also, it's a almost like a mid-season, pre-season kind of thing, like a getaway.
If I was to, I've always been of the opinion that it's a marketing thing. It's just
also that, of course.
UAE can come and watch it.
Yes, of course.
Okay.
Surely there's a marketing part to this whole thing, but Toby does make a great point as well. Because of the weather, they need to train for longer hours outside. Everybody loves Dubai anyway, so it's a great location to travel to. So just because we're covering the whole month, I'm gonna ask a question more. I'm starting with you since you missed out on the last spot, so I'll give you the honor of starting out here. The whole month we played Rennes, United, and then Spurs, and then Rennes again. Was there any defining moments from any of the games that you'd like to talk about? Any particular moment, any particular period, or any particular theme that happened within the month that you would like to focus on? What's that?
I don't think there's anything in particular that caught the eye, apart from the fact that we won the games we won and we lost woefully the one we lost in the second half in France. But, maybe the Socrates red card, because that's the only... maybe that's the only thing that we could say had a very big effect on proceedings, because immediately after that red card, we conceded from the free kick and then we totally collapsed in the second half. And I believe we wouldn't have lost that game if Socrates had been on the pitch. It's not an excuse. I've seen teams go down 10 men and still end up winning games. So I'm not holding it up as an excuse, but I still believe that we wouldn't have lost had Socrates been on the pitch. And then, well, we bounced back well, beat United at home, and then beat Rennes again at home as well. And yeah, it was a very good month for us. And going forward, I hope we can. It's a shame that the international break has come, you know, when we were really getting into our stride again. But I don't want to also use that as the break as an excuse to say that it's going to take our momentum away. You know, we shouldn't do that. And they're in Dubai. And, well, like Toby was saying, they're training outdoors. And maybe there might be a physiological and medical explanation to warm weather training in the middle of the season as well. But I'm not a medical doctor. No one knows that. Maybe we need to get some medical advice on that. But whatever is the case, it's keeping the boys busy. The other ones that are not in Dubai on international duties, and they all converge again. By this time next week, we'll be looking forward to Newcastle.
Yeah, that's good. Because you highlighted the point, your defining moment was the Socrates red card. I'm not sure it's enough, and we have enough data to say it's a trend, but the same thing happened when we played Man United in the FA Cup. We lost Koscielny, and we mainly we lost Socrates as well. The whole thing just crumbled, and then we lost that game to United. Yeah. So from most of the grounds against Unai Emery after we played Rennes was the fact that he didn't handle the substitutions post the Socrates red card very well, and that's how we lost the game. But I'll come to that later on in the podcast. But it's just something that we need to look out for, how important when we lose a player and how we can regain our shape after we lose a player in the match. It's a trend that we all need to watch out and see how Naomi copes with that. I'll go to you, Iman, now. Iman, do you have any defining moment from the month of March?
Well, I think Mo captured succinctly well. It was a good month. We need to put that first. It was a good month. I think the defining part for me was that defeat at Rennes. Now, defeat came at the back of a fantastic performance at against Tottenham, a performance that left all of us very, very proud. And we all felt we had something going at that point. So we went to France believing that we were going to smash those farmers from France. And what happened. And a whole lot of us, because we're Arsenal fans, we're like back again. Back to one good performance and then another poor performance. And the next game was Manchester United. Not a whole lot of us went into that game so confident. Yeah. And then bang, we smashed them, came back, smashed them. And then so I think that defeat was defining for me because I wasn't really sure as to what Arsenal comes back after such a damaging defeat. But we seem to have picked up from where we left against Tottenham, which is very critical for me. And what something we'll talk much about later during the pod is the fact that from Tottenham, Unai seemed to have defined exactly what his first 11 looks like.
We'll come to that.
I just said that noticing that trend in the month of March helps really. You know, we come to this point a lot of times, and we always at least say that it's difficult to judge Unai, and you always have the question as do any of us understand what Unai is trying to do, but it looks like we have a huge clarity as to how he wants to stop his team and how he wants to play. And that's very good for me.
Yeah, so that's I got that feeling from in the month of March as well. There seems to be like a more consistent approach to how we're going to play. I'll come to you, Toby, as well. What was the defining activity for you in March or defining moment in March for you?
I would want to look at it from a different point than anybody else. I would like to say the Aubameyang penalty, the one he actually scored against Man United, was a different, was a seemed like a turning point in both the strikers' season and also the team's fortune. Because after losing that crucial one against Spurs, and then being given, of course, Lacazette is the penalty scorer, is the penalty taker, rather, for the team. But Lacazette seemed to give it to him because he had lost the first, the one against Spurs, which would have helped us win. And Aubameyang took it and scored. And that, for me, that seemed like a very good boost to Aubameyang.
Yeah.
Every striker, all strikers are confidence players. If the more they score, the more they'll be able to score. So to be given the opportunity, it also showed the kind of teamwork and camaraderie between him, Aubameyang, and like I said, Aubameyang, and even the rest of the players in the team. So I think that really showed the kind of team that we have in Arsenal right now, as compared to maybe a few years back when everyone was just looking for glory.
Yeah, well, that's actually very important as well, because on the back of the loss, when he missed the penalty at Spurs, there was a conscious effort by the club and the players to show him that they're all together.
Publicly, yes.
The Granit Xhaka post got a lot of reactions. Yes.
Socrates too.
Exactly. Yeah, they all wanted to. So it was really important that the team stood behind him, and then he got that. But what I would like to ask you as well is, do players have to apologize when they miss penalties? Like the Aubameyang post the Spurs miss, he almost seemed like he was apologizing. I told my son when I was going to score, my son told me he was going to, that kind of thing. You miss a penalty. Like players, you miss a penalty, you get a red card, then you go back. Like I said, apologize as well after the red card against Bate, I think.
Yeah.
So it's basically a hazard that happens during, like, it's a work hazard. So why do you think they owe it to the fans to apologize?
When it's as glaring as a keeper, handling the ball into his own net, or a striker missing a penalty, possibly because of the standard which they have set themselves.
Okay.
You get. So we as fans would expect far more better than that. These are world class players. Aubameyang is a world class striker. A penalty should be meat and drink for him.
Okay.
Again. So maybe because of the standard of which they have been playing before. So for them to miss an easy chance and for them to do something as stupid as elbowing an opponent, of course, we would expect some of contrition from them and say, okay, this is not my normal self. I apologize.
It's just a social media era, and then that's what it's all about. When some 20, 30 years ago, they would have felt apologetic, but they would not have made that apology in the public domain like that. But because it's in the social media era, now if Aubameyang does not put out that post today, the next tweet he puts out, some idiot is going to be on his hand and insulting him, saying, you missed the penalty the other time and you have the guts to come and treat all that rubbish. So it's all the social media era, and that's what it's all about. I'm not really a fan of the whole thing or coming to apologize. And
I think it's a work hazard, actually.
It's a work hazard.
I think I disagree. Missing a penalty is a work hazard. I feel like it's like, honestly, how is missing that penalty any different from the chances he spawned against Ren? The difference is that they were not as critical. It did not cost us the game. Yeah. It didn't cost us any points. But I think it's apologized.
Yeah, but I understand where you're coming from with that. But you know, the thing about the penalty is, because it's a penalty, you are standing one-on-one with the goalkeeper. Everything, the whole world has stood still for you. When you miss a chance, a glitter chance in a game, even if it's a one-on-one, which are sometimes easier than a penalty. You see, it's looked at, everyone can miss it. But when it's a penalty, the circumstances in which it happens, I tweeted during that game. I said, I don't care what anyone says. And I've seen world-class strikers miss penalties. But you don't miss a penalty in the last minute match of a North London derby. No way.
And the wider problem is that somebody needs to even speak to Emery to take Aubameyang off penalty duty.
No, Lacazette is the penalty taker. Ordinarily, we know
he missed it as well. Because he came against United.
Told to tell them that they have the right to pass penalties between each other. Like, I want my best penalty taker to take an important penalty. I don't want to dash somebody because it's what if he misses it again. Then what? I do that again to him to miss. You both owe us apology. No. But more on that.
Honestly,
so this is the way I see it. This is the way I see it. If you are part of a team bidding for making a pitch for a contract, and then in your own part of the pitch, you drop the ball, and you know that the ball you drop might cost your team that contract. You feel that need at the barest minimum to apologize to the team. At the barest minimum, you want to say sorry, and then you're looking for ways to make it up to the team. So
especially if it's something which you allow characteristics.
It's critical.
But when you say the team, you mean your players, right? Or like the team you're saying, the club and the fans. What's the team?
Unfortunately, so the team here is your colleagues, the shareholders. So if I'm a shareholder in a company and then you drop the ball in a massive contract, dude, you owe me an explanation. Do you understand? So that is the way I like to see it. Now, I also agree with Mo that the social media age have even made it more criminal. Has even made it more criminal. So it is both sides. The player, yes, you do owe. Forget the fact that it's a mistake. It happened, but you do owe us. You cannot move on like nothing happened. Something happened. You dropped the ball in the North London derby. You dropped two critical points. So it's not like you're never going to move on. And to even make it worse, you got a rebound to score again, and you didn't score. So you're not going to just walk away.
In that case, doesn't Mustafi
like nothing happened
apology for that game?
No, hold on. So it's like Mustafi.
Mustafi,
you understand?
Mustafi is going to apologize every weekend.
Hold on. For Mustafi should not just apologize. It's just say anything. Just keep quiet and just disappear.
In my ultimate point now. You see, we don't expect Mustafi to apologize because that is Mustafi.
Wow.
No. Toby.
Yes.
I don't expect Mustafi to apologize. Not because it's Mustafi, because if he apologizes, he gets more angry. Just transfer himself to Shatawu for wherever it is and just go.
Let's move on. Okay, just my own defining moment. I have two actually.
You have asked me.
One of which and the one I enjoyed the most was the Stuart. What was our his name? Stuart, right? The Arsenal photographer.
Okay, Stuart.
Yeah, Stuart McFarlane, right? Stuart McFarlane. The picture of Hatem Ben Arfa walking out of the pitch after the game.
Yeah, I love
that was the sweetest moment for me in the whole of match. How he was able to capture that and then communicate it in the way that showed such a very frustrating, annoyingly sick, deranged, mentally fatigued, obnoxious player.
Yes.
Abusing our manager.
Yes,
because he won 3-1. That was just perfect, honestly. My second defining moment was it was the substitutions Unai Emery made at the game against Rennes. It's not every time that you watch football and then you see how there's some substitutions people make and you say, he was lucky, something came off it and stuff like that. But the subs he made to bring in Mkhitaryan and Iwobi, at the exact time that he did against Rennes was just art. It was beautiful. It was conscious. The results was deliberate and the effect that he brought in was just amazing. So I think that was if I had any doubts about Unai Emery at that point in time, was when he converted me.
Good evening.
Two substitutions were just... Okay, so Mo, you've won me over. I'm 100% in that area right now. I absolutely love the way he... Because I was afraid at that point in the game and the fact that he could read the game and make...
Honestly thought he was going to go with a defensive substitution and I was like, if he does this, then we're doomed. So when I saw the substitutions and he came up with attacking substitutions... You're taking over. I was impressed. I was present. If he had brought in Guendouzi,
sorry, can I add something?
Yeah.
I like how. I'm sorry. I feel like I require again. Simon and Mo are going to be very critical of this, but I feel like I require a very, very, very high level of thinking for my manager. So you see, I agree with those substitutions, yes, but I feel like those substitutions only worked because that initial team, you people don't want, people are not admitting it now because we won the Manchester United game and we won the Ren game. That Ozil, Ozil, Aubameyang, Lacazette formation, he actually leaves us wide open. It makes the game end to end. We have a higher chance of scoring, but you know what? They also have a higher chance of scoring, especially when you pair Ramsey and Xhaka in midfield, because Ramsey is going to abandon him at some point. I mean, it's normal. So when that game was going, I was like, God, please just let Unai Emery go to two defensive midfielders, two creative midfielders on the wings, and one striker, which is what he did. So again, it's good that he did it and we won, but it feels like nobody else is seeing that lineup he used against United. You know, I'm telling you that if Lukaku had scored that third-minute chance, you know there's a very good chance we lose that game. Jokes apart.
Sorry to cut you short, but if we're going to go in the game of Eves, you understand? Exactly. If we're going to go in the game of Eves, if something had happened when my mom had me in her womb,
I would have done that.
Honestly, if we're going to use the game of Eves... I agree with you. I understand where you're coming from. But, you know, if you have been on this spot, this is the argument we've been making. When I was saying that Unai is... Because Simon was accusing him of being too defensive at the point. And I said, having all our creative players on the pitch might open us up, like you just said. And Simon told me that, like, when we had Arsene Wenger, we used to go end-to-end, like you had against Man United. End-to-end. It's either you win or you lose.
So he went from overly conservative to, you know, whatever the opposite of overly conservative.
Because at a point you have to go for it because you have nothing to do. It's all or nothing. Against Trends, it was all or nothing. He had to go
against
for that formation.
Against Man, it wasn't all or nothing.
Right now,
I agree with
more. We have 8 games to go, and those 8 games are cup finals. Against United, we had to win. A point was not enough.
Really
win or lose.
Formation, it goes to Wolves.
Okay. So, sorry. Again, I think, Simon, is there a point where we look at the Manchester United game a little bit tactically? Because I think I disagree with Mastermind on the tactical level.
Okay.
On the tactical level. The game against... And see, you need to, again, watch Manchester United play since Ole came in and realize that what he has succeeded in doing is to make Pogba the fulcrum of the team. And there are a few games, I think there are 2 games that Man U had not won prior to us. Mm-hmm. And those games, what the opposition had done was to isolate Pogba.
Yeah.
Ensure Pogba had no role in the team. Now, to isolate Pogba, you need to get players who are better than him on the ball. Get players who are better than him on the ball. Matic is aging, so get players who can run rings around him. And that is what, I think that's what Unai did. Unai also understood the fact that the Manchester United defense is up there for taking. They are up there for taking. They are slow with pace. And then he set up his team to run rings behind them, wear them down, and then you can then play. I think
you know
think
that
again.
That was the plan.
Like Mo said, it's really, really not easy to analyze games to say if this had happened, if that had happened. You understand? If Aubameyang has scored all the chances we had in France, maybe the second will have the red card. Maybe we won't need to go home in the return leg. Do you understand? If Aubameyang has scored the chances we had against Chelsea in the first leg, and then the penalty against Tottenham, we would have been contested for the title and not fighting for top 3. You know what? Do you understand? So there are a whole lot of ifs we can see within the course of a game. It is a human being interaction. It's not robotic. It's not robotic to say, okay, if I play this formation, nothing would happen. Human beings, things could happen. A player could be slower in running or in reaction. Those things could happen. Lukaku could have a one-on-one and then hits the bar, and then we have a penalty and then we hit. Or Xhaka plays a long shot and then the clock wins. Takes it into the net. You know, the ifs could happen. But if you watch the Man U game again and again, you cannot say that Klopp, I mean, Unai wasn't the better tactical man than Ole on that day.
So the thing is, Mo, I agree with you that ifs happen in football. Football is a game of ifs, yes? But if you take away the result, watch the football itself, watch the game itself, yes? I feel like Man U are essential. See, there's no magic. I said it in the game after the game against PSG. There's nothing grand in what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is doing.
Yes.
There's nothing spectacular about it. He's doing what Leicester did that season they won the league.
Mm.
Soak up pressure, make sure your defensive block is low. When you have a chance, have Martial and Rashford break at speed. Use Pogba to find them and score. End of story. There's nothing.
It's not easy. About it. No, it's not easy.
Again, I'm not saying it's
easy. If it is easy, Jose will do it.
Jose has a different style.
No, it's not easy. Let's be clear.
Jose doesn't want to play like that.
Okay, guys.
One more thing before you go. You didn't ask for the defining moment of that moment.
You don't have a defining moment.
Oh, I did it.
I do, actually.
Okay. Quickly. What's your defining?
It was the game against Spurs. The setup of Unai in that game was perfect. It was, if not because of Mustafi and his usual brainwave that cost us that, and then Aubameyang's subsequent penalty miss. The setup of that game was perfect. Did we concede any decent chance in that game? I don't.
They had only one shot throughout the entire.
We
game.
Did. We did. To the linesman. We conceded to the linesman.
We're not gambling.
Wait, Leno's double save. You guys are forgetting Leno's.
Yeah, double save. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Okay, yeah.
I did not see it. I only saw the linesman's phone.
our setup was balanced. We had wingers attacking back. We had Ramsey pressing. It was perfect. In fact, what I thought means that this defense is actually not as bad as everybody says it is. Mm. It isn't.
Everybody says it. All the results that they've actually considered. It's not like everybody's saying it. The results are there.
So move on. Yes. What's the next point, Simon? Please.
Your defining moment actually leads to the next point, and that's we have seen Unai Emery be more expressive in recent times. Do you think, and this is, let's do this quickly because we've covered some of the points I think in the earlier questions, but do you think that he has finally settled on an approach or at least a starting 11?
So that question is directed at me, right?
Yeah, continue.
I hope not. I feel like different games have different ways you should set up for them. If you want to go all out, I mean, the same way two podcasts ago, I was against the idea of starting three holding midfielders at home against Cardiff. Mm-hmm. The same way I was against starting two strikers, Ozil and Ramsey, against United. So I believe that...
Two midfielders, you mean?
Two strikers, Aubameyang and Lacazette, then Ozil,
yes.
Ramsey in the midfield too. I feel like over the next 8 games, I hope that we pick and choose the players depending on the formation, depending on the opponents rather. If we take that thing he did against Rennes and United, if we take that exact same formation to Wolves, I'd be in trouble. I'm sorry.
The Wolves team is actually scary. I think sadly we won't be able to see that again because Ramsey picked up an injury, I believe, away with Wales. So we don't know how long that would last. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I guess. So, Toby, do you want to speak on that as well? Like,
What Unai has settled on is a series of 11s. We've been to see a pattern where, like we discussed before, if he's going to play Lacazette, Ramsey will be there. I think he's going to do something else. He has found a way to play both Aubameyang and Lacazette, putting Ozil. He has done that like 3 or 4 matches back-to-back.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like one starting 11. There's another starting 11 where he plays with one striker and Iwobi and Mkhitaryan on the wings. That's a separate kind of starting 11.
Mm.
I don't think he has settled on his best centre-back formation. It's always going to be...
Socrates and
Koscielny. If he's three at the back, Socrates, Koscielny, and Nacho.
Nacho.
And then this guy will be on the left. So we are beginning to see a pattern. Maybe yeah, not again, just again, one starting it, 11, but it's a pattern of how he's going to set up his team.
Again, I think he also wanted to give some players a breather.
Yes. Like Torreira.
Guendouzi and Torreira were already showing signs.
Yes.
They were in the red zone, so they needed to rest. Well, like we all know, Ozil and Ramsey have been having holidays for a while now, so they could play more. Iwobi also was beginning to show that he needed a break because his form was going down, so he needed to be taken out of fire. Mkhitaryan came back from injury, had a knock again, went back. So it was also important that you manage those things, especially going into the dead end of the campaign. So I think again, apart from the tactical setup of the opponents, he also looked at giving his team a breather, and which is so the beautiful thing again for me is that he finally, I don't know how more is going to take this, but finally. Unai has embraced the entirety of his team. And this is the one thing I said. Maybe I don't say it right, but I believe that with the team, the entire team he has, he could juggle things around and then get results. And right now, there are games where one player is not playing or the other player is not playing, and nobody is raising an eyelid because you just understand that it's probably tactical, is this, and then you understand how these things work. But I also agree with Toby, we have finally, and this is the best part for me, this is the best part for me. We have finally found a way to drop Musa.
Let me just chip in there. I think Mastermind was talking about Unai not having, that he should not go with the same lineup for every game. We know, I think, we have seen enough of Unai Emery this season to know that he is not one to have a set formation and have a set 11 for every game. He's going to tweak things around, especially going into, I think, after Newcastle, we have about 5 games or 6 games in 3 weeks.
8 games.
There you go. You see, so there's no way he's going to have the same formation and 11 going on. But like we all agree, I think we are beginning to see the pattern he wants to embrace and what he wants to do, especially for the big games. Because all the big games, Spurs, Chelsea, I think he's approached them the same way. So we now know, and this is what I was saying all the while, and I was beginning to sound like a broken record when I was saying 6 months, because I felt it was too early. We didn't know this man enough. Because now he has come up with Ozil, Aubameyang. I was reading Adrian Clark, you know, the guy that does the breakdown. I was reading his write-up, and he said Unai Emery has tried 8 different formations this season already. 8 different formations, you see. So he has juggled the team around and juggled them. And what does that tell you? It doesn't tell you about someone that doesn't know what he's doing. It tells you about someone who does not know his team enough, but he is trying to fashion out that team. What do I think is the best in this team? And now going back to the Ozil situation, he dropped Ozil and people were already making a civil war, pitching their tents with Ozil against Unai, or pitching their tents with Unai against Ozil. And I told people then that I think Ozil will still play for this team under Unai Emery. And it has happened. You see, it's not
a choice. Did he have a choice?
Oh, you see, that's what you will say. What do you mean he didn't have a choice? No. It's not. Okay, the games that Ozil... Go and look at the results. No, wait a minute. The games that Ozil did not play, go and look at the percentage of our wins or losses with Ozil. I'm not saying Ozil is not quality. He is quality. We all know this, but Unai Emery wanted something that Ozil was not giving at that point in time. And Ozil maybe...
He's still not giving it.
And he is now. How do you know?
He's still not giving it.
Well, listen. Whatever the case is, Ozil is back in the team. And I did not like this, how people were making it look as if... And no, it's not like that at all. He is. I told you then on this spot, I said it, that Ozil will still play for this team under Unai Emery. We should just allow the man, even if Unai was just trying to discipline Ozil for something, let the man do the job. He's the manager. He has the right to discipline Ozil.
No.
And honestly,
Hold on, let me round up.
One person that has emerged with a lot of Ozil has earned my respect, honestly, totally, in this whole saga. I'm not as if I've not always respected him, but the way he handled the whole thing. If Ozil were to behave the way a lot of our fans wanted him to behave, he would have thrown the whole club into ruins just because he was not playing. But honestly, he has emerged out of this
with
a lot of credit. A lot of credit.
Not let him do that.
Okay. I really don't want us to go down this route again.
Simon, please. Now, so, Mo.
Yes.
It's so sad you weren't at the last pod.
Okay.
You understand?
Yes.
Now, even the last, which was at the end of February.
Yes.
February was not even as good as March, but it was a pod where we all agreed that there was a lot of clarity coming into what Emery is trying to do.
Yeah.
Do you understand?
Yes.
And interestingly, what we have done since this pod came on is that we have consistently backed the manager.
No two ways about both, that. Yeah.
Both on this pod and outside this pod. And we have, in our own little way, come gun blazing at those who lose the nuts in their head. You understand? Yeah. There are no two ways about it. So it is not an Unai versus Ozil or this. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
Now, critically for some of us, and I think I say this for everybody almost in this pod, one of the things about us being Arsenal fans is the culture of the club. And this is a culture I have known since I became a fan of the club. And probably one of the biggest things why I'm a fan of Arsenal. I have no apologies for that. Is that we are very, 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 very cultured. We are very professional. And we have respect for people. And that thing runs is a tradition in the club. So for me, I felt very uncomfortable when it looked like we are hanging Ozzy out to dry. I felt very uncomfortable. And also, it became bad when I realized that the club was consciously feeding the media as to the fact that they had problems with Ozzy's wages, they needed to move Ozzy on, and all of that. And so, all those were giving a very negative vibe. And like you said, Ozil showed uncommon maturity to handle. Now, what if Ozil had done the regular thing almost all the professionals do? We would have been a club in the mess.
Okay, Ozil actually did put out a tweet where he said, so what was that tweet again that caused the storm? The one about where he was quoting Dennis Beckham. That now was
okay. Okay, play for the name. Something like that.
Yeah, would have been a club having high sporting cameras checking training to see if Ozil and Emery were beating themselves or they were abusing themselves. Hold on, please. My point is, I honestly think Emery understands what he's trying to do. I honestly also think that Emery was thrown in the deep end with the job, trying to understand things and errors of them. I also do think that Emery and Raul Sanelli and the rest of them could have managed the Ozil Ramsey situation a whole lot better. But we are all happy that they have somehow managed to manage the scenario, and we are all fine. And
Okay, just to round up, thank you very much, Imana. We're happy that they seem to have found a way to sort out that problem. Just to close on the subject, I'm reading a tweet from Obinho, and he sent this tweet on the 10th of March. He says, Ramsey and Ozil start together for only the sixth time this season. They have won four and lost one as a city at home of the other five. So basically, that just sums up how you put quality players on the pitch, you get quality results. We're going to have we've kept the Napoli fan waiting for a while because we've gone a little longer than scheduled. I will take your comments on the draw against Napoli after his interview. Given the whole drama that happened in the last few minutes, I guess we can all use a little break. So see you guys in a few minutes. And we'll have our Napoli fan in at the time as well. Be nice. Be nice. Okay. Especially you, Damola. Be nice. Okay.
We'll be right back.
back to the second segment of the show. And like I promised earlier, we have a Napoli fan who's here to have a conversation with us, generally about Napoli and in particular about the game against Arsenal that we're going to have to play against them in the Europa League quarterfinals. Unfortunately, the rest of the crew can't make it into this part of the pod due to some technical issues. But I've taken questions from 2B, Mo and Damola, and I'll be asking Massimo, who's here with us, to talk about Napoli and the game against Arsenal. Welcome to the pod, Massimo.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Great stuff. Okay, so let's just get to know you a bit. So where are you from? Where do you stay? And how long have you supported Napoli?
Okay, so currently I'm in the United States. I live in Alabama, but my family is originally from Italy, from the south, from Napoli, of course. I've supported Napoli my whole life. So my dad obviously grew up supporting the club, and he passed on that love to me.
Oh, great stuff. How did he do that? Because, like I said, I have two boys, and I'm trying to raise them to be Arsenal fans. Unfortunately for me, I got married to a Chelsea supporting family, so I have a lot of work. I'm trying to ensure that I wash that out of my kids. So, how did your dad pass love for Napoli to you?
Yeah, of course. My dad, he obviously, like I said, he grew up in Italy.
Okay.
But he went to the San Paolo whenever Maradona was at Napoli, and it was the stories of going to watch Maradona play and just going to watch the team play and his experiences at the stadium that helped me to fall in love with the club. And then growing up, I would just always sit down and watch the games with him and spend time with him. So he would buy me the jerseys, and I'd put all the photos on my wall. So I think just him talking to me about the club and just sitting me down and having me watch the games with him is what made me fall in love with the club.
Good stuff. So, like most of us in Nigeria, we started supporting Arsenal on the back of Kanu Wanko joining the club. So I guess I can relate to how an international fan would see supporting supporting the club in Italy. So so how would you, from more specific bit with Napoli, how would you rate your season so far?
This season so far, it's kind of been up and down. We've been very inconsistent throughout. Obviously, we didn't challenge as much as we'd like in the league. Juventus have kind of run away with it. In the Coppa Italia, our domestic competition, we unfortunately went out a little bit earlier than we expected to. But I think we can turn things around and end up being able to call this season a success with a hopefully what can end up being a Europa League win. Unfortunately for y'all, we got to go through y'all to do that, but I think for us to have a successful season, then that's what we have to do. But it's been up and down overall. Going into the season, I knew it was going to be a transition year. Obviously, we had Sadi last year, and then Ancelotti came in, and Obviously, Ancelotti is a great coach, and I'm glad we brought him in. But we knew that this was going to be an adjustment because we didn't have Sadi, we didn't have his style of play anymore, and then Ancelotti was going to need time to bring in the players he wants and get his message and his ideas across to the squad. But overall, it's been as of right now, I can say a little bit more positive than negative. But depending on how the Europa League turns out, then I'll be able to make a definitive decision for sure.
Yeah, same for Arsenal as well, because we are also in a transition year, given that we Arsene Wenger left the club after 22 years, and then Unai Emery is just taking over. He's taking a bit of time to understand his squad, and he's just beginning to get a full grasp of the squad that he has. So we are also in somewhat of a transition period. So it's a good time for both clubs to play to play themselves, and hopefully we go through above you. So
I think going forward, we do have the ability to win the league soon. Obviously this year I knew it was going to be a huge task, because obviously you have a Juventus side that's so dominant, and then they end up bringing in one of the best players in the world in Cristiano Ronaldo. So I knew that this year was going to be it was going to be tough, but I've seen little flashes of what the team can be this year, and I know with another transfer window under Ancelotti's belt, then we'll be able to start building a squad, and then we'll have a definitive play style that we can move forward with and have players that fit that play style. So I think pretty soon we should be able to be back in that race for the Scudetto, and who knows? I mean, I hope eventually soon that we can finally take it off Juventus's hands.
I'm sure most of us have that same expectation, because being in a league where one club just completely dominates kind of puts a dent on the quality of the whole league. But just to ask again, how do Napoli fans perceive being in the Europa League? Because for most of us who are Arsenal fans, we consider our club to be bigger than the competition. And playing in it sort of gives us a dark realization of how far down we are. So do you have that kind of, do Napoli fans also have that kind of feeling that being in the competition, the lower competition in Europe, that their club sort of fits into that? Or do you have like do you have the expectation that Napoli is actually bigger than the Europa League?
I think what
do Napoli fans think of it?
Our being in the Europa League is definitely something that we've come to terms with, because if you asked me this question last season and we were in the Europa League, I would have told you no, we're a Champions League club. Because under Sarri, we played some of the most attractive football in Europe. But okay, Now, like I said earlier, we're in a transition year. The style's kind of switching up. So once we got kicked out of the Champions League, it was really disappointing, because obviously we were in arguably the toughest group in competition with PSG and Liverpool and Red Star Belgrade. But we did very well in the group. I think we ended up getting knocked out of the group stages due to tiebreaker rules. Ourselves and Liverpool were even on 9 points. So it was definitely disappointing to be knocked down to the Europa League. But upon further reflection and just thinking about it a little more, I think Napoli fans as a whole, we saw it as a competition that we could definitely win. A lot of pundits and just people around the football world are favoring us to win it. And usually we're not the favorites. We're kind of like an underdog. But now that we're the favorites to win it, we're hoping that we can, you know, finish that out and get a trophy and be able to move forward and then get back to being a Champions League club.
Yeah, I do agree with you on where you say about the group that Napoli found themselves in the Champions League. I particularly enjoyed your away game to Liverpool. I thought you guys really did good there, and the fact that you were so close to qualifying for the next stage and then you've dropped into the Europa League also it puts some perspective as to why your team is being touted as in the competition. Unfortunately, you have to play Arsenal, so that's not likely to happen. But but you also talked about Sarri. I would like to hear your opinion on what do you think is happening to Sarri at Chelsea? The Chelsea fans don't seem to have taken to him, or the players as well. Not that I'm complaining. I actually enjoy the Sarri out tweets, but what do you think happened to him?
I think it's just a lack of faith from the board and just Chelsea as a club. You saw at the beginning, I can't remember the exact number, but he went around, what was it, 10 games unbeaten, and you could see the fruits of what people call Sarri ball at Chelsea. You know, Chelsea had a different style. They were playing well, but I think now it's just a lack of support from the board at the club. You know, obviously, whenever you bring in a new manager with such a demanding style of play, it's going to take a while to fully ingrain that style into the players. And Sarri, as a manager, he doesn't like to get involved in the transfer front. So he just looks for players that fit, that are able to play his style, because his style is very demanding. And I think players just must have – because, you know, players in the Premier League, they get paid all this big money, but I think it's just they got tired of trying to adjust to his tactics and they've kind of turned on him. You could see with the whole Kepa situation. But Chelsea tend to do this. They'll bring in the new manager and look for immediate success, and if they don't get it, they'll ship him out and get the next one in. And I think as a club, you can't do that, because you can't just keep looking for Band-Aids for the situation. So I think Sadi deserves another year at Chelsea to fully get his tactics through and establish his style of play at the club. But it's just, as a Napoli fan, it's sad to see him, you know, get treated this way, because in Napoli we loved him. So
just to more Arsenal related questions now. When you got the news that you were going to play Arsenal, what was your reaction?
They were arguably the second best sides in the Europa League, but between all the teams left in competition, obviously Chelsea's in there as well. But I think Arsenal and Napoli are two of the best sides in the Europa League so far. Yeah. And I knew it was going to be a great game. But like Napoli, Arsenal, you know, you don't know which Arsenal you're going to get. So I think for me, it was like, dang, hopefully we can turn up and it can be our day. So, because I believe on our day we can beat any team, but that's the same way with Arsenal. You don't know which Napoli you're going to get on match day. So when we drew Arsenal, I was like, okay, this is something we can do. And I believe that if we are able to progress past Arsenal, then we'll end up winning the competition. I believe whoever wins this tie is going to be the team to end up winning the Europa League.
Yeah, I do agree that whoever wins this tie stands a really, really good chance of winning the whole competition, which we both need, because we're both in situations where we pretty don't have options to win the league that we're playing. So what do you think is the weakest point for Napoli? Because for Arsenal, we were very strong in the attack, and we have a very good midfield as well. But in defense, we were being suspect throughout the season. So where would be the weakest point for Napoli that if Arsenal were going to get through, they would have to exploit?
I think the weakest point for Napoli right now is either our inconsistency going forward inconsistency as at the back as well. Like I mentioned earlier, this year it's been a lot of up and down, you know, in front of goal. You don't know. We haven't been able to capitalize on our chances as much as we have in the past. And in the back, we make a couple of defensive errors that shouldn't really be made at the level of play that we have. So I think for Arsenal, if Arsenal are going to progress past Napoli, what it's just going to come down to who takes their chances. So,
and luckily we have really good strikers in Aubameyang and Lacazette, and I hope that we will be able to go through the Napoli defense. But Napoli has Koulibaly, mm-hmm. one of the best defenders in the world right now, and how would you rate his performance?
I think Koulibaly is one of the most important players at the club, to be honest. Without him, I think it would be very tough to it'd be very tough on days. But I think the price tag that he's been touted to have, I think he's completely earned it. Honestly, in my opinion, he's one of the best defenders in the world, if not soon to be the best. So I think when we play, he's our most important player. He's able to get it done at both ends. He can make a slide tackle or block a goal. And as soon as he does that, he'll take the ball, run upfield, and then end up getting an assist. So he's able to do it at both ends. And with defenders, you never really see that. So I think just his influence is so important to the side, and without him, we'd be in a lot of trouble.
If you're going to put a percentage on your chances to get through against Arsenal, what would you say through against Arsenal? What would it be?
I think the percentage I would put on, if Napoli shows up, I think, sorry to tell you this, but I think we have a really good chance of going through. But if I were to put a percent on it, if we show up, I would say around 70-80%. But if Arsenal end up showing up as well, it's one of those things that could go either way. So if both teams show up, I think truly it's a 50-50.
I'm going more with a 60-40 in favor of Arsenal. But good. Okay, I hope we can have a conversation again after the first leg, hopefully, just see how our teams fare and whether these percentages will change afterwards. But for now, we can just stop there for now. That would be a good place to stop, right? Good. Then it's good to talk to you. It's good to talk to you. Good to get your opinion on this. And then we'll have a chat after the game.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I appreciate it a lot.
Thank you very much for coming on.
All right. Have a good one. Forza Napoli.
Yeah. Come on, you Arsenal. All right. Bye. Yeah. Cheers. Bye. Okay, so that was a great conversation with Massimo, and then hopefully when we chat with him after the game, we will be the happier team. To round up, let's just focus on the games we have in April. If you've ever seen like an opposite side, so in March we barely had a game, and in April we're playing Newcastle, we're playing Everton, we're playing Napoli twice, we're playing Watford, we're playing Crystal Palace, we're playing Wolves, and we're playing Leicester City. That's an enormous number of games to play in a month. Obviously, the objective is still that hopefully by the end of the month, we're still in the running for top four, or should we have cemented top four via the league somewhat and still be in the Europa League? What do you guys think? How do you think we're going to fare here? A number of these games are away as well. Maybe what I should have done is identify the games that are away from home, and this will be harder, obviously. But what do you guys think? Newcastle, Everton, Napoli twice, Watford, Crystal Palace, Wolves, and Leicester. Let me try and find the games that are home or away while you talk. Go on.
The home games are Newcastle.
Okay.
Because I think we have 8 games to go. 5 are away and 3 are at home.
Oh.
So we have Newcastle at home. We have Crystal Palace at home.
Okay.
And I don't know the third one now, but all the others you mentioned, Watford, Everton, Leicester City, Wolves, those four are away.
Man, those are hard.
You see, so
those are hard games.
And they're very hard games. Because
yeah.
After Newcastle, we go to Goodison Park, and we're beating Newcastle at the Emirates. That's a given. Next is going to be Goodison Park.
Oh.
We are not losing there, that's for sure. We're not losing to Everton. But if we... No, we're not losing. We're not losing to Everton. They don't have...
Depends on how windy it is.
Oh, yeah, well... Jurgen Klopp. Yeah, but I don't see us losing at Goodison Park. I just hope we can make a win. You see, because Everton this season have been one of those sides that It's either the win well or the lose terribly. Yeah. You see, they have very good game winners because they have like Lucadini and Sigurdsson. These are very good Sigurdsson. They are very good at dead balls. You see, so if we're going to go and be stupid with conceding all those things around the box, then you know they're going to be very good with their deliveries. But another stat again is we have not really conceded much, you know, from set pieces this season.
Just one.
Yeah. So it's an area that we've overlooked a bit, you know, in analyzing the team. You see, so I think we'll win at
one start as well.
Pardon?
Let me hit you up with one start. We are the only team yet to keep a clean sheet away from home this season.
Oh yeah, well. That's we just have to score more than they do, because and with what Unai Emery is doing, you see, like that Wolves game, and everyone is saying it's going to be a tough game. I agree, it's going to be tough, but I fancy us winning at the Molineux more than I fancy us winning at Goodison, because Wolves have got what has come of Wolves now. It's a double edged sword sort of for them, because right now when they drew with Man City, they were the first team to stop Man City winning. You know, when Man City were flying at the start of the season, they went there and they couldn't beat Wolves. Then they've beaten United there. I don't know what's the big scalp. They couldn't beat Liverpool anyway. Chelsea.
Chelsea, yeah.
Yeah. No, they drew with Chelsea.
At the Molyneux.
Hazard
pulled the ball back at the last. They drew at Stamford Bridge.
At the Molyneux.
But they won at Molyneux.
Okay. 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 There you go. You see. So because of those big scarves, they've claimed, they will go into the game against Arsenal, you know, fancying their chances. So they're going to be a bit more open. They're not going to be conservative. And I think we have the players to hit them if they're going to come up open like that. And Raul Jimenez, I think that's his name. Jimenez,
yeah,
right?
Jimenez.
Yeah.
Yeah, top scorer. Yeah, yeah. He's not someone, he doesn't have the brute force to trouble people like Socrates and Koscielny. I hope Mustafi is not there to badge into him again. But I really fancy our chances at the Molyneux. Tough game it will be, but I fancy our chances there. The game I fear the most is Leicester.
Hmm.
Yeah. The game I fear the most is Leicester. Manager.
Yeah. Okay. So, anybody else has a comment on that before we round up?
It's really going to be a very difficult game for a month for us, rather. A very difficult month for us. About 8 games or more than that in 1 month. It's really, really going to be a difficult one for us, especially with the Napoli game, because you have one eye on that game. Just have that feeling that if we get past Napoli, then our chance of winning the Europa League is very, very high. That said, again, the pressure, again, in the league games are two. On paper, it does look like Arsenal has easiest running, and that is the narrative everywhere. That Arsenal has got the easiest running of the three competing teams for the only two available slots. Now, that again is on paper. You realize that these teams that we are going to play against are fighting for their lives. They are really fighting for their lives. And so it's going to be...
Sorry to cut you short, Ima. I agree with you that on paper, it's looking like we have the easiest running. But I don't agree with you that they're fighting for their lives, because if you look at the fixtures, one advantage we have is we have teams who have secured their places against teams that are in the relegation zone. Watford are secured. Wolves are secured. Leicester secured. You see, so all these teams that were playing, in fact, some people will tell you that they are the best teams to play by this time because their aims for the season has been achieved, sort of. You see, so they are not really fighting for their lives, and this is when they now begin to go on their holidays in their mind, mentally. Some of them begin to give to
let me flip it again. Yes. Let me flip it now. So if we have three teams, Watford, Leicester, who are done and done. Newcastle, I think Newcastle is also almost safe. Newcastle had about that many points to safety. Now, if you have those kind of teams, they are also a problem. There's this thing about someone who has nothing to lose.
Yeah.
There's also this about somebody who has nothing to lose, and we have everything to lose. So also, it is tricky. Yeah. The point I'm trying to make is that those ties are tricky. They are ties if we win, it's not going to make headlines. But if we lose, it will make all the headlines. So there are games we have to win. Like you said, I'm pretty worried about the game against Leicester with Brendan Rodgers.
Leicester and Watford are the games I fear the most.
I'm very comfortable with Everton. I can't remember the last time we lost at Goodison Park. I don't know.
I can't. There was a game where Roberto Martinez played Lukaku on the right and roasted us.
So that was the last three. We lost 3 goals to nil or thereabouts. So that was the last time we lost at Everton. And I've watched Everton this season. I don't know how Marco Silva has his job. I don't know how he still has his job. I think there are games we can win if we take them one game at a time. If we take them one game at a time, and not overly think about the other games. There are games we will win. We could have an advantage or disadvantage with our rivals playing most of the games before us. It looks like most of the games are going to play now, and we'll be playing the last of all our rivals, whether we're playing on the weekend or playing on Monday. I think we have 3 Monday night games in April.
That's pressure.
So it could be pressure. It could be pressure if our rivals win their games. It could be under kind of pressure if they drop points to capitalize. But funny enough, this is the first time in a long while I am going into the business end of a season and a little bit confident. a little bit confident. I do think that Arsenal will finish third. I hope I don't get roasted for this.
I think so too.
I don't think Arsenal will finish third. And I listen quietly to Massimo scoring themselves 80%. And it is a feeling that permeates the media and then the few Napoli fans I've read, Italian fans I've read, they do think that the Napoli team is a better team than the Arsenal team. And you can understand, they are second on the table, Arsenal is battling to be, but nobody understands the difference in between Napoli and Juve. That again, it works for me. I prefer us to be the underdog. What is critical for us is that the first leg will make the first leg count. If we make the first leg count, then we have a solid chance. The stadium in Naples could be, like Mo said, is a devilish place to go to. What they put you through, even before the game, is mentally draining. But if we have
the night before the game,
is mentally,
you will be rest assured that there will be Napoli fans singing and jumping right
near
in
your
the hotel where
hotel.
The Arsenal fans.
Not
yes,
not fans.
They'll spend the whole night there.
The players have. It's a whole lot of unnerving thing. But if we have, we cannot afford to do the same thing we did against Pathé, against Rennes in the first leg. We can't afford that again. We need to take the home leg, take it home. So if we had the kind of result we had at home against Pathé or against Rennes, then we will skate through. And I say this with every sense of humility. If in both legs we edge at Napoli, I think we'll finish third and win the Europa League.
Alrighty.
I think we're finishing third because by the time Spurs play again, after next week's fixtures, by the time Spurs play again, they will be behind us because I see us beating Newcastle and they're going to lose at Anfield. So by the time so. Yes, they will lose at Anfield for sure. By the time they play, I think Crystal Palace at home in their new stadium. I give them that
game.
Crystal
Palace, they're not winning.
Yes. It's Crystal Palace, their first game.
It's at home.
Yeah, the first game at the new stadium is against Crystal Palace.
Yes, yes, yes. So let's even give them that game. Let it be a bonus when they lose, you see. But all I'm saying is we have every chance to finish third because Chelsea, like you said in the running, all the other teams are still going to cancel each other out. And I just pray they keep on drawing against each other. Apart from Liverpool and Tottenham, well, a draw would not be a bad idea as well because I can't stand the Liverpool Premier League victory. So if that's going to stop them from winning the league, Tottenham can get a point there. Chelsea are still going to go to Anfield. They are going to Old Trafford, you see. So United still have City to come to Old Trafford and Chelsea. So these teams are going to cancel themselves out. So no matter how, it gives us a bit of margin for error in the running. I'm not saying we should take that margin for error, but let's say we win our three games at home. That's 9 points. And we can manage to win another two away, making 15 points. I think we'll be good to go with that.
Okay, thank you very much, guys. I have a kid to take to church, so I need to run. Toby and Westamala. Okay, guys, just quickly in 1 minute, what you think in April? Just round up.
I think we'll do well. I think we'll get past Napoli. I think by the time April is done, we should be third because I know the other teams will drop points against each other. So if we keep on this momentum, but I'm kind of worried about our away games, away to Wolves, away to Everton, potentially banana skins if we don't take care. Yeah, so I think we should be careful with those games. But on the all, we should
Bond is the one that scares me the most.
Exactly. No, Bond doesn't scare me. Wolves. I think Wolves will be very difficult. Well, luckily for us, they have a FA Cup semi-final to plan for.
Bond is about the last game, if not the last.
Yeah, Bond is still May, so we don't have to think about
Bond. Yeah, thereabouts. By the time we go there, we'll know our fate. I just hope we can finish it before then.
Yeah. We're singing, we've done it again. We've done it again. If there's anybody else who can bring us, make us more depressed, it's you. So just watch your mouth.
So while he was talking, I Google, I checked our list of games in April. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
First of all, our away form is always a fear for me. I'm never comfortable with away games. The gulf in quality between Arsenal home and Arsenal away is something else. I'm looking at
like Man City and Huddersfield.
Yes, I'm like, why? And the thing is that all of those teams that we're playing this month away from home are teams that are in that. I think they're all between maybe number 7 and number 11. Leicester.
Yeah, yeah.
Everton. Those are not games that
difficult.
But the truth is that I honestly think that this top four is, I mean, it's a three horse race. I honestly believe that Chelsea is out of that race. I believe that the only way Chelsea is getting into the Champions League next season is to win the Europa League. I believe I don't see Chelsea winning any away game at any top 10 side. Again, this season, I'm serious. Okay. Like, typically, I don't watch.
And unless something happens, Tottenham are the ones that will drop out, you know. I see Arsenal United getting
it's possible. That's why I say it's going to be any two of Arsenal, Tottenham, and Manchester United. But let's see if we can get points, if we can get the win at Everton. I mean, Watford is hit and miss. We do there well there sometimes, we struggle. That Wolves game. If you give me a point now, I'll take it. Now, against
Wolves, we'll win at the Molineux. We'll win in Wolves.
Oh, okay. I like your call.
That is the game I am most relaxed about.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Don't worry. We're all on social media together.
I'm worried about that game. Seriously.
So I watch Wolves play a lot, and I think it's the way we love teams to play.
Yes, actually, that's...
They will allow us to express ourselves.
Yes.
They will open up and we're going to hit them. That's what I said.
The team you would not like to play is a Watford at home.
Didn't we need who
won't allow you to play?
Didn't we need a Mkhitaryan 98th-minute goal to draw the Emirates against Wolves?
Time, Wolves still had the surprise element in them. They still had that surprise element in them. They're a good side. No one is saying that otherwise.
Is it not Wolves?
No one does now. Anyone that does that doesn't know football at all, because they really proved themselves this season as a good side.
At this point,
you see, what people seem to underrate about Wolves is that they had a very good window. They signed some very, very experienced players, Champions League players, you know, Moutinho and all those players. Ruben Neves. These are not just useless players. So people forget about the name Wolves. People keep the name Wolves in head and don't remember the quality of the players they signed. They signed some experienced players. But by the time they came to the Emirates, they still had that surprise element to them. That's gone.
I've got to the point where I'm more interested in our opponent's games as I am in our games. I mean, if we draw and United and Chelsea lose, I mean, that's a good weekend as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's a function of... But I think...
Every point counts.
Every point counts, yes. So
every point counts.
I think, ultimately, we have enough, to make top four, one way or the other. Even if it comes down to goal difference, I think we would.
But that's a good place to close. There's no better place to close than that. Thank you, guys. Thank you very much. So thank you, Toby. Thank you, Mo. Thank you, Mastermind. Thank you, Manuel, as well. Remember when I sent the invite for the pod, I said it was going to be short. Now I'm afraid that
it's going to be one of the longest.
It's going to be one of the longest.
You have five loquacious people on the pod, and you're talking of a short one.
Interview everybody one by one. Don't let us
interview. Right. Okay. Let's see how it goes. So just thank you to everybody, right, and everybody who's listening to us. Just mouth about Arsenal all through the whole about over 1 hour here. We want to say thank you. We really appreciate the fact that you've stuck with us. We want to say special thank you to Massimo as well for taking out time. I think it's about 8 a.m. where he was, so he had to wake up early to join us. So we really appreciate the fact that he did that, and hopefully we can get him back on for after the game, after we win as well. So, okay. So thank you very much, everybody. Like goodbye, right? Goodbye. Yeah. Good point.
Bye.
Stop.
Yeah.
Bye. Bye. All right, just have a great month, and I think Arsenal. I hope Arsenal has a better month than we've ever had. A lot of games, and I hope that we win. So thank you very much. Join us again next month, where we'll be talking about happier times as well. So. Cheers, guys. All right. Bye. All right, so the podcast is available on all platforms, everybody. Spotify, Apple Music, anywhere that is reputable, you'll find it. Just search for the name Canon Crested Arsenal Podcast. And share it as much as you can as well. We really appreciate if you do that. What we appreciate more is if you send us feedback and tell us where we went wrong or what we could do better. And if we're doing good, just let us know. We really appreciate that. So cheers, guys. Thank you for listening. And I hope
you take care, Simon.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Hi, Massimo. How are you?
I'm good, Simon. How are you?
Very well. I'm sure I'm much, much better than you are. We beat you guys 2-0.
Yeah. You're definitely better than we are right now.
Yeah, and it should have been more, to be honest. We had so many chances to make it a lot more than that. And so you guys should be grateful.
Yeah, definitely. The first half, y'all really worked us. So we were lucky to just go down 2-0.
How did you feel, though? How did you feel? Okay, so you were on an Arsenal podcast, basically. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's like the first name. So when you're watching the game, like, were you watching it with the perspective of, oh, I had a conversation with a few Arsenal fans and they listened to me talk and we really need to smash Arsenal because I said I was 80% sure. So were you listening to it from that perspective as well?
Honestly, while I was watching it, it was probably one of the maddest, it's probably the maddest I've been in a while watching a Napoli game. And I knew as soon as I was like, dang, I was like, man, on the podcast, I said we had a really good chance and now we're getting smashed. And now the guys are going to give me a hard time and I have to see it all on Twitter. And I'm like, oh my goodness. I had to prepare. I had to stay off Twitter for the rest of the day. I couldn't do it. It was too much for